Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
Hello and welcome again to another iTricks Magic Week in Review. This is Michael Lauk, Justin Robert Young, once again AWOL. We are going to track that guy down, I swear. One day we will find Justin Robert Young. We will strap him to a seat and we will make him do a podcast again. But instead this week we have a magician and ventriloquist, John Peasy, coming to us live from his hotel room. He's on tour right now. John, are you there?
Hey, Michael. How are you?
I am good. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing very good. I hope you hear me well because I'm on my cell phone.
You actually sound pretty good. We have had some cell phone issues before, but I'm hearing you loud and clear, so I think everybody's going to be able to hear you just fine tonight.
Well, it's a pleasure to do this. I'm a big fan of this podcast. I've always been a huge fan of magic, and I've always loved listening to Justin Robert Young as well. So to have you here, too, who I know as well, it's a beautiful thing.
Just between you and me, I always say that I can't find him. I tied him up, threw him in the basement, and took over the show. That's how it went.
Crack that young man in the head.
That's right. So we had a showdown, and, you know, he's younger, but I'm bigger, so that's how it went.
I'm a huge fan of the podcast. I listen to it all the time, as a matter of fact. I really enjoyed listening, and lately I kind of backed away from that, and I got busy doing a lot of other things, and so now it's great because it's just reinvented itself, and now that you're here, and I can start listening again. And I do like iTricks as well.
Well, good. We like to hear that we have fans out there, and you're somebody that I wanted to kind of connect all of our fans to, because as we were talking off the air a little bit, you're one of these magicians who is out there busy, you know, working and doing shows all the time and being a full-time professional magician. So a lot of magicians, ironically, don't know you because, you know, there's not a big catalog of John Peasy, you know, magic books and tricks and stuff. But, I mean, just last year, this year, if you're comfortable, tell me, I mean, what's your average schedule? How many shows a year are you doing right now?
You know, I've always done a lot of shows. I've been doing this full-time for the late 80s. And, you know, back then I used to do like several hundred, 800. Now I'm down to probably 400 to 500 maybe a year. It depends. It varies, you know, certain months. Like this month, my schedule's online. You go to johnpeasy.com and it's on there. You'll see where I am every day. It's kind of out in the open, if you will. But I'm a variety type performer, so I work in many different venues. And because of the different venues, you're able to keep busy in multiple ways. I do close-up, I perform stand-up, I do comedy, I do magic, I do illusions, I do ventriloquism. People know me more as a ventriloquist, I think, in the last several years, and I've been focusing more on that. However, I was bit by the magic bug as a kid, and that's really, to this day, I spend more time looking, creating, inventing, enjoying, reading. Magic is my driving force. Everything started from that first, and then the ventriloquism grew out of that, yet it seems to be at the forefront in the last several years.
Well, before we go on, you dropped your website, and I just want to point out to everybody, it's johnpizzi.com, John Peasy, just in case everybody doesn't know how to spell John.
Yes, there you go. John Peasy. Yeah, and I also have a Facebook page, too. But that's what it is. That's actually a weird one. That's John Peasy and Andy. That's facebook.com/John Peasy and Andy, which is Andy's my like main character dummy, who's like the worst of all, the nastiest of all of them.
I have a wacky question for you. Let's just jump into the vent thing real quick, and we'll definitely circle back to magic. When it comes to your ventriloquist dummies, and I'm asking this for a reason. I'm not making fun of you, I swear. Do you treat them like they're real little people off stage, or are they just props and you don't treat them any better or worse than any other prop you would use?
Twofold. I treat them much better than most of my props because of how difficult they are to get to have made and how long it takes to create them. They're really like Mercedes-Benz of puppets. They're the best in the business. I mean, so they cost so much money and they take so long to create that you do give them extra care. Whereas if I ended up buying another guillotine, I could probably get them pretty quickly. You know, so it's treated better. But do I treat them like little people? No. They are props. I'm not freaky in that way at all. I see a lot of ventriloquists that do. They dress them up in different outfits, and they bring them to different places, and they prop them up in their house. And no, I keep mine in the case in the car, in the garage, and I go out and I do the job, and I put them back. I'm not into them that way. However, being a ventriloquist, which is so much fun, I do take them seriously as to who they are. So they're characters. They all have unique characters. And each one of their characters, I know who they are to the point where if I heard a line or a joke or think of something funny or hear something that I find amusing, I know right away that, oh, that fits this guy. So I know their characters so well that I kind of know what they should be thinking and saying all the time. And I'm constantly pulling that out of the ether, what to use for them.
Okay. Let me explain why I ask you that, just so so you know I'm not like poking fun at crazy ventriloquists. I read Jim Henson's biography recently, and several of the other Muppet performers were horrified that he treated the Muppets just as props. And in fact, some of his early Muppets ended up being rags around their house that the Smithsonian Institute eventually bought and restored after he'd like cleaned cars with them and stuff. So I'm kind of interested in how people like yourself treat those items now, because, you know, that biography definitely made it clear that some people, some of the puppeteers, treated the Muppets as if they were, you know, small children, and Jim Henson treated them as if they were scraps of cloth that he had sewn together and made talk, you know?
I think because he's the creative guy. When you're the creative artist, you're creating stuff, and then you move on and create other stuff, and it becomes unimportant. It's not as important as the next thing you're creating. I find that to be really true here, too. I've created a lot of new things, and I'm constantly trying to make something new out of what's old and trying to make things futuristic as opposed to towards the past. And I've noticed that as soon as I get focused on a project, I'm 100% all in, and then once it's completed and it's successful, I just let it go and move on to the next thing. Now, the case in point is that app. I made an app like a year ago, and I put like a whole year of effort into it every day in my life for hours, talking to programmers in India and China and trying to do things that couldn't be done and pushing the envelope and writing checks to do it. And then, like a year later, now it's all running and it's fine and works great. And I'm like kind of like moved into other things already. And other people are like, oh, if I had that, I would do this and I would do that. And I'm like, I did that. I'm moving to the next set. So I think when you're a creative person, you get off on the fact that you could create something new and develop it and take it to its peak and then move to the next thing right away. It becomes unimportant. And I can see why you'd be like waxing his car with the Muppet. Not important at that point. The next one is important.
Right. Right. Well, you know, that makes sense. And now you bring up your app, which I honestly, you know, I knew about your app. I'd forgotten about it. We talked about that once before, a long time ago. And now you have that. But one of the things people out there might remember you for is you were on America's Got Talent. And you did ventriloquism with iPads.
Yes, yeah, that's, I was actually on America's Got Talent two seasons in a row.
Two seasons in a row, that's right. My little girl
don't
Peasy,
know that.
My little girl Peasy was rooting for you.
Oh, thanks, that was nice. My little girl Peasy, that's my daughter, right? Your wife hasn't told you?
Hey,
this is an intervention. I'm not telling you that I'm the father of your daughter.
Hey, start writing checks because we're hitting the big bill years.
You got it. You know, the America's Got Talent thing was really bizarre because I was on two seasons in a row. A lot of people didn't know that because the first season I went on, which, by the way, was really great, I came up with this bit where I took up the host of the show and turned him into a human dog as a dummy dog, and Nick Cannon. And it was a great bit. As a matter of fact, that was my first bit that they taped, and I got a standing ovation. It was it was great. I mean, 1 to 10, it was a 10. It took the house down. And when they cut it up and put it all on the air, they didn't give it a lot of time, and it played once. And the night that it played, the President of the United States, which is still Obama, came out and did a speech, and I got kind of preempted across the board and only clipped up and really just cut up and destroyed. And it didn't play very much, and it didn't get much. It was almost like it never happened. And yet it was fantastic, and it was great, but it didn't get a lot of airtime. And then I got kicked out. And then the next year, I left that show that year, and I said to myself, I'm gonna come back and do this again, but this time I'm going to come up with something even better, because you have to still get another standing ovation. You have to come up with something creative and new. So I did spend the next 12 months working on the app, and that was the thing I worked on to bring to AGT the next year. And I bought it, and they liked it, and again, it got a standing ovation again. It was great. But this time it played, and it got a tremendous amount of response. So it was a lot more fulfilling to get that response from it. It was exciting.
Now, AGT gets some bad press among magicians. Some of whom have been on, some of whom are just, you know, watching at home on their screens like everybody else. Because the show seems to like to, some of the early judges definitely were not pro magic. I think that's fair to say. And it's not always shot in the best way to compliment magic. I think that's fair to say too. But I think it's also fair to say that they have a million sound problems for singers. You still there?
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking about what you're saying, because I was on that show for the two seasons. In the second season, when I was in Vegas, I had the opportunity, and not everyone had this opportunity. I don't know if it's because they knew me from the year before, or they liked me, or they didn't notice me, or they know I'm really a pro and I'm in the entertainment. I don't really sure, but I actually sat through every single audition for that year in the theater being taped for every single one. They brought other people in and out, let them watch a little bit of it. I got to stay as long as I want and watch every single performance of everyone. And I saw all the issues and technical issues. I saw everything backstage. I saw how everything ran. I started to understand reality television. And in answer to your question, it appears as if they don't do a good job or whatever sometimes on that little three-minute clip. However, there is a tremendous amount of effort on their part to make people do well. However, whether they do well or not is independent of that, but there is a tremendous amount of work involved, and I saw it. And it's a big undertaking, and it's hard to be everything to everybody in that kind of situation where people are coming and going so quickly over. And then you're housing them and feeding them and dealing with the problems and the technical issues and lighting. It's overwhelming. It's a big, big millions of dollar production, and that requires millions of things to be attending to.
Well, so you're talking to, you know, hundreds of guys out there who are trying to, you know, do what you're doing and be full-time performers, full-time magicians. So is America's Got Talent, is that something you would recommend if they think they're good enough? Is that something you would say, go for it, kid? Or are you going to try to discourage them? Or are you going to not give any advice because they're going to be your competition someday?
Well, definitely not C. As far as the competition thing is concerned, I encourage anybody to do things better. I push for growth in every area of this entertainment business. I love the entertainment business. In reference to the AGT, though, I would encourage people to do it. Yes, and you'll hear a lot of performers say that it's grueling, and it is grueling. It's not easy. It's grueling. The days there are grueling. There actually, when I was on in Vegas, there was two other magicians there. Really nice people too, and it wears on you. They move you around, they put you in a room, they make you stay there 8 hours, give you sandwiches, and it's like a lot of hurry up and wait, and then all of a sudden you get your moment in the sun and you're exhausted, you're all excited to do something, and 15 hours later you get to do it, or 2 days later after waiting. So it's a lot of hurry up and wait and moving around. It's difficult. It's grueling on a performer that is not used to that or not used to that kind of performance schedule. But to me, I've been I'll go do five shows on a Saturday or three shows in a day, and from running from one location to another. So to me, buzzing in and out of gigs and waiting and doing and having people serve dinner in between, and it's all part of the same pain in the neck it is to perform in different venues. And so to me, this was just, I got it. I watched what they were doing. I seen how they're corralling people, and I get it. So in answer to your question, yes, I would definitely recommend people to do it, but you must be ready. You can't do it without being ready, because it can make or break you. The last thing you want to do is go up there and fail, and the failure rate is high. They're looking to fail a lot of people because it makes good entertainment. So you need to really make sure that you got your stuff together and you're ready. Because once you open a door, if you're not ready for it, it closes behind you and you'll never get back in again. So you never open doors until you're really ready. And it's hard for a person that's a performer, egotistically, to understand whether or not they're ready. Sometimes you're better off having somebody in the entertainment look at you and try to determine that.
Do you have a circle? Do you have people you trust? Do you have a confidant, a critic, somebody who can, who gets to tell you you suck? That's what I'm asking.
Well, my wife does, because she's critical, because she's seen it all and seen it all before. So she's critical enough to be able, has a critical eye and can tell me whether something good or bad. As a matter of fact, when I'm working on magic, she's the last person I show. I don't bring it to her until I'm confident with it. It's good. And if I could fool her, I'm in good shape, because she's taking this ride with me the whole time. On the other hand, yes, I do have confidants. I have a lot of friends that are magicians, comedians, and ventriloquists, and even illusionists, and a lot of close-up guys, too. Yeah, a lot of diverse performers. And I have certain circles of them, and I rely on each of them for different aspects of what I'm doing. If I'm working on a new ventriloquist bit, I'll call a ventriloquist friend of mine that I'm close with, and we'll discuss it. And he may see something from left field that I hadn't seen. And I love talking to people that don't think like I do, because that adds a dimension that I wouldn't normally have. We all see our own things one way. And I like to see things, I'd like to think I could see things out of the box, but very often you can't. And somebody else can make you aware of that.
So did you, as you were coming up, were you a club member? Were you in the IBM or SAM or anything like that? Or were you just lucky enough to kind of, okay.
No, I belong to SAM number one in New York City, which I'm still a member of. And I used to go to the meetings. It's a really weird story, Michael. I started out, first of all, as a little kid, at 6 or 7 years old, I loved magic. In school, all day long, instead of like listening to the teacher, I had Robin's Easy Magic catalogs in my book, and I was dreaming of becoming this magician. That's all I wanted. I loved magic. Somebody showed me a trick when I was 7 years old. I got bit. And from that moment on, nothing became important in my life but that magic. That was it, just magic. That's all I cared about. And what happened was, as time went on, I started learning and buying magic tricks and reading books and doing things, and I wasn't smart enough to understand I wasn't really good at it. I really wasn't. I was terrible. But I'd join those clubs, and I would go to the clubs, and I would listen to what people said, and I thought they knew, but they really didn't know. You know, and I can tell you, one of the funniest things, I started doing kid shows first. And the kid shows, I became very successful in it, too, for a while. I mean, I went from, in the 80s, I was knocking out like several hundred kid shows a year and making a lot of money for a young man in my 20s doing what I wanted to always do. But I got to tell you, one of the things I'll never forget was when I was in Tana's magic shop, and Tony Spina was behind the counter, and he was always nice to me. And he said to me one day, I told him, I want to work at a convention. He said to me, you're not ready. And I said, what do you mean? I'm doing 700 shows a year. I'm making over $150,000. I'm doing great. And he was like, well, you're not ready yet, because when the market's ready, they'll come find you. And I said, well, what do I need to do? And he says, you just keep working. Work more and more and more. Get every gig you can. Just take them all, free, good money, bad money, whatever. Just continue to keep working until you, and then they'll come get you. You'll come to the top. And he was absolutely right. But at the time, I didn't see it. I didn't realize what he said. And he was right. You just have to work really hard at performing. You have to be like a pilot flying in the cockpit to gain that flight time in order to really understand what it is to be a performer. It doesn't come from reading books. It comes from flight time, and flight time is performance time. And now I feel like my life is, I'm flying so much that my life is really the downtime in between the flying. What little you have there. It's very odd. Yet, I love it. There's nothing else I prefer to do. It's my purpose. It's weird.
Hey.
But that's the way it's played out.
Well, let's take a minute and go to break, and we will pick this up from there right after this with John Peasy.
iTricks.com.
Congratulations. You just survived tax season 2013. If you're looking ahead to tax season 2014 and thinking that a few charitable donations would probably help you out, we'd like to point out that iTricks regularly runs stories about lots of great charities that are associated with magicians, usually because magicians are helping them raise funds. Today, though, I'd like to talk to you about two charities that are actually for magicians. Both the Society of American Magicians and the International Brotherhood of Magicians have funds to help magicians who found themselves sick or are just in a time of need. At the IVM, it is the Magician Support Fund, and in the SAM, it is the Houdini Fund. If you have a little extra, you're looking to donate, we urge you to contact your local IBM or SAM representative to learn how you can support these great funds to help support our fellow magicians.
iTricks.com.
And we are back. This is Michael Lauk with the iTricks Magic Week in Review, and this week's guest is John Peasy, a magician and ventriloquist, who you can check out at John Peasy. That's JohnPizzi.com to keep up with his schedule, see videos of his work. And right now we have him right here, so let's talk to him. John, before the break, we were talking about getting input from people that you trust, a circle of friends who can and confidants who can frankly just be your critics. And I think that's one thing that magic unfortunately doesn't have, is there's not like a professional critics class like artists have and actors have to kind of give a very objective opinion of what they do. As you were coming up, how did that circle continue to help you?
You know, Michael, what happened was when I was first coming up, I joined the SAM and the IBM, and I used to go to a lot of the meetings, and at the time, they were very helpful at that time. But as time goes on, you need to move, I think, into a different direction on some level, because, I mean, you'll forge relationships there with other people that are working towards the same thing as you are, and you'll grow, you know, out of that, almost like a garden, you'll grow out of it. But I think in order to get the right people around you, you have to diversify. You can't just go to the SAM club or the IBM club and every week and bring in a new trick and do something new in front of the same group of magicians, because you're not really getting the real value of somebody that's the working class people, the public that you'll be performing for, because the magicians are already tainted to some extent. So it's better to pull all the other arts into what you're doing. Have other people that, you know, that are artists, or draw or carve wood or comedians or whatever, anything to have that different outside approach to what you're doing. I think the more you, I hate to say this because I love magic, but I think the more you get away from it and get involved yourself in other things and then pull them into the magic, the better off you are. Cause, you know, I remember years ago reading, I think it was Rudy Colby's lecture notes, which I found fascinating, that at one point he said he just threw down all of his props that he was doing in a show and then picked up stuff around his house, started trying to put them together to create something new. And that, to me, I respect so much, because that is the creation of the process of creation, is starting something new, not looking at what's been done. And that, I'm a big proponent of always looking at what the future is. I think the future of magic and ventriloquism specifically, that we always draw from the past. We always look at what other people are doing and then try to see how we can do it. I think that's a mistake. I think what we need to do is look at where we're going and what can we create that matches the future, not what we've done before. Less is more.
Well, okay. You know, I think that's actually really valid. Where, maybe this is where the friends come in again. I mean, how do you know, how is a young performer know when he's ready? When, you know, there's not a lot of magic schools anymore. You know, I went to art school personally, to do pen and ink illustration. And
art school, you only had one student?
Huh? Yeah, he did. It was cheap though. But in all seriousness, the thing about art school is you don't have drawing classes. You take criticism. That's what art school is about. You know, you have professors who are just brutal. You have professors who will tear up things that you have done. But you kind of need that, you know. And I had one art professor who used to say, my job's not to teach you how to paint. It's to teach you when to stop painting. And that always,
that's interesting.
You know,
that's interesting.
That always stuck with me because that's one thing that you know, it's very easy to do is overpaint and keep painting when you should be done. And I think so much, you know, because there's not a lot of magic schools around, that's something that magic is kind of missing. And so many groups, you get enthusiasts together and, you know, and this is not to bag on magic clubs. You know, I said a couple weeks ago, I'm an IBM member, but it's if you get around with a bunch of guys and you all just really dig magic and you all have read the same books and you're trying to fool magicians, it's really easy to get away from the real entertainment value of what you're doing, you know?
So absolutely, absolutely. But what you're saying is not new, and what I'm saying is not new either, that, you know, when it comes to magicians, yeah, we're always trying to entertain the other magicians, and you have to make a choice as to which part of the market you want to be in. Do you want to be a performer for real people? Or do you want to be one for a magician that you have good chops for other magicians? I mean, you have to do make that choice somewhere along the line, and no matter which one you do, it's fine. But in reality, to be a great performer, to be a performer, not just a magician, but a great charismatic performer that brings his personality to what he's doing, you need to spend that time out in the field doing it in front of people. There's no other way.
All right. So
in the same way as an artist, you have to know when to stop drawing, he's telling you. It's the same thing. You have to continue until you become it, until it becomes you, until there's a synchronicity between those two thoughts.
I guarantee you right now, there is a 15-year-old listening to us, okay, who desperately wants to be the next Dynamo or David Blaine, or maybe if they're a really, really old 15-year-old, the next Doug Henning. But if he's sitting there, what can you tell him? What's your advice to say when you're ready to go out there?
You know, the advice that I got was right. You go out and take what you do and bring it out and show it to everybody and don't be attached to money. Just perform. Constantly perform. Anything, anywhere, any way, anything you can. It's not about money. It's about flight time. And flight time is performing in front of real people always. That's the first step because you have to have a place to work these things out. Otherwise, you know, doing it in your living room or in your basement is not good enough. It needs to be in front of people. You cannot get that anywhere but in front of people, that you can't get that response back. So that's the first step. I mean, and I did those things. I had done kids' parties, and then I started doing family parties, and people were saying, can you do a family party? Yeah. And I started doing adult shows. Can you do that? I said, yeah. And I wasn't very good. I was terrible for a long, long time, really long time. I wasn't attached to the money. I was just attached to getting another job and doing it and evaluating and then doing it and evaluating. And then eventually, as time goes on, you start to get a hook on things and you start getting grounded in it. And then you start developing new bits and adding in new pieces. And the next thing you know, you got an act. And then you get on the road and you find out how different it is everywhere you go. There's different people. And then you start getting diverse. And I have to play it this way in front of Orthodox Jewish people for Passover, and I have to play it this way for the fire department. I have to be dirty for this part, you know, for the police department, and I have to do a nice family clean show. It's flight time. So anything, anywhere, anytime, as much as you can. That's the key. No attachment to the end result. Just perform.
So are you a fan of street magic?
Absolutely.
Okay. Are you a fan of just walking up to people and doing magic?
Well, I personally don't do that, but I get hired a lot to do corporate, like a walk around at a corporate event, or if I'm doing a show, like I work for Toyota a lot, so they'll call me and I'll do a show in my, you know, in the island somewhere, the Bahamas, and I'll get there and they'll hire me to do a show, and then for the cocktail hour, I'll do walk around. So that sort of a thing, I get to meet and greet everyone before, and then when I go to do a show, I've already established a great relationship with people, so it's easy to do the show. I just walk up to the people cold in the street and start performing magic. If you're going to be a close-up guy, that might be a good way to go, but I would probably try to do some restaurant work first where you work something out with a restaurant where people will allow you to be there and entertaining people. And that's another thing. There's a large amount of written material, the rights and wrongs of how to approach people and how not to approach people. A lot of magicians overdo it and don't know it, because it's an ego-based thing as opposed to an analytical one. You have to be conscious. Consciousness is something that happens from time, or you just have it. It's not something that you're going to get when you can't wait to show everyone your next new trick.
You know how I started?
No.
It's a crazy... I bet I'm the only person in the world who started like this. I used to run movie theaters, and I would do magic in the lobby or in the aisles when our films were late, which they almost always were, because the owner of the theater would not account for adding the trailers to the running times of films. So if a movie was 2 hours, he would schedule it every 2 hours, and then he would put 10 minutes of commercials on it, and everything would be late after the first one.
That is definitely unique. I've never heard that. And that is one of a kind story. I doubt there's many people that started that way. That's very unique, Michael.
But it is a great way to do magic, because no one expects it, but no one is inconvenienced by it. You know, they are at the movie theater to be entertained, and it's just a nice bonus. There's no cash changing hands, you know, in the lobby or in the seats. So it's not like they're thinking you're going to hit them up for a tip or any of that kind of stuff. It lets you do a lot of quick stuff. It's very similar, I think, to a restaurant mechanically. I think I've never done a restaurant gig, honestly. And I bet it's a real nightmare in comparison, because you have to sidestep the food service, and you know, you can't walk all over when the waiter needs to be there and all that. But in the mechanics of it, it gave me a chance to just do things. You know, I could go and do something I was working on 20 times, 30 times in a day, you know, or more. And it really lets you
polish.
You're polishing
when you're doing it. You're polishing yourself in front of the crowd on how to enter, how to exit, how to get the most response, what their behavior. It's a polish. Again, it's that same repetitiveness in front of real people.
Yeah, and it's you know, and it was a real interesting experience, and it helped me a lot. But at the same time, you know, it also took off so much pressure, because it wasn't really my job, and it wasn't a gig I had to go and chase. And it was just such a beautiful way to get going, and it gave me like you said, so many flight hours. It's not even funny. I've actually worn out a thumb tip. I've actually worn through a thumb tip because I've used it so much in a movie theater.
You know you're working hard when you wear out your thumb tip, huh?
I'm saying. Torn through Sonata gimmicks.
Have you ever wore out a condom?
Nope. I got two kids. You figure it out.
Yeah, do the math. Yeah. No, that is a very unique thing. You're right. That's really interesting. I never heard anyone say they did magic in a movie theater like that. That's bizarre. And you're right. That is really a venue I would never think about. But you had a unique job, so.
Yeah. And luckily I was the manager, so nobody could throw me out.
Yeah, there you go. And all the popcorn you could eat. That must have gotten your thumb tip really greasy.
Oh, God. I hate popcorn with a passion that you would not believe. I started working in movie theaters when I was 9 years old. My uncle ran a movie theater, and I did not like popcorn when I was 9 years old. by the time I stopped working in movie theaters, I was about 30, and couldn't stand the smell. To this day, I still can't eat popcorn, can't even be around it. Disgusts me. I don't know how you people eat that.
I can see that.
I don't know how you people put that in your mouth.
I don't eat my popcorn, though. You know, it's funny, too, because when it comes to the close-up, I was the kind of guy that got into the close-up later, not young, when I was younger. When I was younger, I was more into the proppy magic. I was into all the gaily colored Chinese boxes with dragons and Chinese letters and stuff on it. I really kind of thought that's what magic was. That attracted me as a kid, all the boxy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And
totally,
I get it at the time. I didn't understand what it really was. I just was attracted to the tricks and props, and I thought the bigger props made better performers and bigger illusions made you. I didn't realize. I tell you the truth, in this magic business, I've grown like a cactus very, very slowly over a long period of time. I wasn't a quick learner, apparently. But I didn't do close-up until maybe 10 years or several years ago. I mean, I knew some card tricks and things, but I really wasn't a really good close-up guy. And then I just spent 2 or 3 years really engrossing myself in it. And I developed some really great chops, really great chops. And now I enjoy doing it. And then I ended up starting doing some restaurant gigs. And this was after performing. I mean, I've been performing comedy for a long time. I mean, I write jokes every day now. I write jokes. I write material every day, even for some other comedians. And at the time, when it came to doing now, like being later in your career in some sense, I started doing close-up at some restaurants, and I did it for a year or so. And I was actually disappointed. I was really not enjoying as much as the performances. I felt like the glory of it was so much less compared. I mean, you walk off stage in front of 100 people making them laugh, and they're crying, and they're laughing, and they love you, and they pay you money, and they're all happy, versus going to a table of 2 people having veal parmesan. It's not the same. It's clearly not the same. So I'm not knocking the magic close-up for guys that work in a restaurant. I'm just saying that the glory seems so different between there and comedy. Dramatic disparity.
Yeah, but every now and then you get to have that moment, you know, that one-on-one right there in your hands moment with someone, and that can be worth it. I mean, you've had that.
Oh,
happen.
Absolutely. I love the moment when I, especially the mentalist walk around stuff. I noticed that people will buy it so much more easily today. You know, they think you could tell their future. I'll do some mentalist bit, and they'll buy it, and then they'll say, "Oh my God, that was amazing!" And I'll say, "By the way, you're pregnant." You know, it's a joke, and just let them know it's not real. You're right. Seeing people say "ooh" and "ah" and be amazed is the beauty to it. It's beautiful. It really is to see a person's face turn pink from the blood rushing to like their shock and amazed and amused. It's a beautiful thing. It's magic. It's what magic is supposed to do, is create those feelings. And I love that. It makes me happy to see it in someone else and that I had a part in bringing it to them. However, in close-up magic, it seems like it's harder and harder to do that today because between the technology and the props and the tricks, it seems like the guys that have really good chops are the guys that are able to produce those results more efficiently than the people that are proppy. I noticed when I got away from the props, started getting chops. Like, I'm doing a bar mitzvah, I'm doing walk around, and like, as you're doing it, like, the kid will go, "Oh, that's the wow trick," you know, from the internet. So he's Googling it on YouTube on how to do it while you're doing it. But when you've got chops, it doesn't make a difference because you could take out a deck of cards and start doing things that, because you got good chops, they'll never can find out or see how. They don't get it because it's hidden in developed skills, not in a prop. So I think chops versus props is the adage for a good close-up guy in that kind of situation.
Well, you know, there's a famous story about Howard Thurston. Years ago, Camel Cigarettes was publishing how magic tricks worked. And it was a big, you know, it was a big brouhaha at the time. And, you know, there were lawsuits and all these threats. And they published in all these magazines how sawing a woman in half worked. And Thurston took that ad, blew it up to a giant poster, and would display it in the lobbies. He would make sure people looked at it on the way, and he would talk about how Camel explained this trick. And then he would say, and now I'm going to show you my version, and I defy you to tell me how it was done. And then would proceed to do exactly what was illustrated in the Camel ad, and saw a woman in half exactly with the method they had exposed, and no one ever caught him at it. Because,
well, isn't that the same thing that happened with, you know, the magician, the masked magician? I mean, it's almost the same exact thing. It hasn't hurt anybody because nobody's focused on it that much. They, you know, people like to be entertained and they like to be fooled. So it really, I don't think it's hurt anyone.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you're entertaining people, you're golden. If you're not, if people are having time to look up your tricks while you're doing them on your smartphone,
right?
You might need to adjust what you're doing.
Agreed. Totally agreed. Totally agreed. It's an interesting concept, you know, when you see how the internet has changed the world to the point where you could have a group of kids around you, and you're doing something, and they're kind of figuring out what it is because they're grouped. That means you're not holding them quick enough, or you can't hold everybody. And that's the whole difference, because that's the point I'm making about performance of a show in front of a large group versus that internet. The internet part is great in the right environments with the right type. Every type of material has to be suited to what you're doing. It's not generic. You can't say, I'm great at this, I'm going to do this for everyone. You can't. You got to bring different tools to each table to create different results. So it's analytically, I see it that way.
Right.
But I'm not discounting the magic in the close-up in any way. I love close-up. And I love magic. I mean, I live in this world of it every single day. I spend more time in magic than I do in ventriloquism. Yet I'm hired more as a ventriloquist than a magician, ironically.
Are you seeing? See, I think magic's on the upswing now, and I think this is going to be a really big year for it. I'm going to have to talk to you again at the end of the year. We'll see if the magic has picked up, just because I think there's going to be a lot more magic on TV, you know, this coming year. And I think it's poised to make a real comeback in America. So.
I agree. I totally agree. And I also think that in order to be good, to get this out of it right now, as magicians, as a whole, we need to change the way it's being perceived on a new level. The days of big production shows with lots of boxes and girls floating around and is dissipating, I think. I think you need to be more organic in the magic. It has to be set up better, delivered on a theme, perhaps, or delivered with a persona behind it, and it has to have less stuff, less clutter. In other words, because if you're really a great magician, you'd be able to walk out on stage and make anything happen with minimal. You don't need to have tremendous props to create the magic. It should be very simplistic and organic. And I think that's the future of better magic for our business and our group. I really do.
You know, I think you're probably right. And in a way, I have to admit, that hurts me. Because I think you and I are probably of a similar age that, you know, we grew up on those 70s magic specials. You know?
Yes.
The Blackstone Jr. and Mark Wilson and, you know, big boxes, Circus of the Stars, kind of crazy stuff. And,
right.
And you know, that's you talk about you didn't do close-up till you were older. When I was a kid, and I'd get a magic book, and it had these personal, smaller, you know, tableside parlor effects and things like that. That to me was amateur magic. That's what I was learning now, because in my head I knew if I'm going to be a professional magician, I'm going to have, you know, at least six girls working for me and a couple guys to push around boxes and maybe an elephant and a donkey and a horse. And cause that was professional magic. You know what I mean?
You're absolutely right. And I was raised on that too. And I see how you can carry that forward in your future and think that's the way it should be. But you start to know better. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't make it right. Just because we grew up on it doesn't mean it's now. In the year 2014, where we are now, people's attention span is very small, very limited. They don't think, they think more quickly, they behave more quickly, they react more quickly, they're emotionally more charged. They run around drinking coffee and energy drinks. The world has changed dramatically, and you have to, even, you look at the internet, they have things like Vine where they show 7-second clips of videos because we don't have the attention span to watch something longer. So as that because the attention span gets less and less and less, you really need the magic to be much more precise and organic and in the moment and engaging. Not necessarily, just because we like that then doesn't mean it's now. You know, like when you're a little kid, you crawl on all fours. And then all of a sudden you start walking, and you never go back to crawling because you know better. That was the past.
It was just St. Patrick's Day. I went back to crawling.
I understand what you mean about that. And did you send any snakes to the sea?
I might have. It's a blur after a certain point.
Apparently St. Patrick drove saints to snakes to the sea, but I don't know if he took them in a minivan or what. But you know what I'm saying. I think we're at a point where that change is really necessary. Just think of this. If you walked out on stage and you had nothing and you were saying that I need a glass of water and it appeared, that would be great. That's magic. It's in the moment. It's happening. You had the intention and then the creation was there. To me, that's where we need to be now. That's the way we need to create the new magic for the future. Not I'm going to roll this big box out and this is going to happen. I think even though I enjoy it and I still like it and I'll watch those specials and think they're the greatest, I still think there's a new paradigm that's about to break. And the person that comes through with this new paradigm will be the next successful star. That 15-year-old kid that's listening now, he'll be that next guy. I don't think it'll be another guy with a bunch of boxes, in my opinion.
No, I think you're right, and I know better. I'm just saying, every now and then I come across something. You pick up this old, DVD of Ed Sullivan shows, and you see one of those great old performers that you and I grew up with.
Yeah.
Some of them are not even the huge names, but they made the rounds. They were on Dinosaur and Mike Douglas Show and Dick Cavett and all that, and it just it's always going to have a special place in my heart, even though I know I look at it now. And even though I love it and I love watching like a Blackstone and his, his deep voice and all the girls and the big boxes, even as I love it, I look at those big boxes. I'm just like, wow, how did this ever really happen? Because obviously something is going on. I mean, you're pulling out this giant box for no apparent reason. But other than the nostalgia, definitely we need to move forward. And speaking of moving forward, what can we expect from you? I mean, everybody should go out and check your calendar at johnpeasy.com and see if you're going to be in their area. I can't recommend that enough, because if you see John, you're going to be entertained. But do you have anything? Do you have any rabbits up your sleeves? Are we going to see you on America's Got Talent this year again?
Are you gonna repeat? Not this year again. No. What I have coming up, I'm doing a big thing in New Jersey on May 10th, I think it is. I'm doing this Wounded Warriors project with some popular radio DJ guys down there in New Jersey and also Joe Piscopo. I just signed that. And I just signed a deal, too, where I'm doing 20 weeks. Every Thursday night starting May, the first Thursday in May through October, with the Borgata Hotel in Atlantic City. I'll be there every Thursday in a show for a burlesque show, where I'm the ventriloquist in the burlesque show of comedy and magic and dancing and all that. So I'm there for like 20 weeks. That's going to be a lot of fun.
That should be great. And, we didn't even get to really talk about your ventriloquism. It just suffice it to say, John did not move his lips the entire podcast.
Absolutely.
He was using P's and B's and everything.
Yeah, I could say that. Well, I'm not I don't think I'm the greatest ventriloquist when it comes to those B's and P's. I work really hard on it. It's not easy. I know people that are better than me. I'm funny. I try to bring funny to the forefront versus the most technical guy in the world. I wish I was as good as some of the people I know. There's some people that are really technically wonderful. But it's so much fun to do. It is so much fun. I really do enjoy performing all the different facets and every day. And I go out of my way to make sure the shows go well. Case in point, right now I'm in a hotel room in Bluffton, South Carolina. And I came down here to do the shows for 4 or 5 days at all these different developments and communities. And they were going to give me airfare to fly in. And I said, no, let me drive. And they go, you're crazy. It's like 12 hours from New Jersey. And I was like, I don't care. When I drive in, I'm able to carry my own sound system and mic stands. I can bring in backdrops. I have more magic and illusions I can bring in. I bring several puppets as opposed to two that I can't travel. So I could bring a bigger show. So I actually went out of my way to come down here and do all of that to create a larger show for my people by coming to see them rather than flying with a limited amount of puppets and things to do. And that, to me, is, you know, displays that, yes, I care so much, I'm willing to go out of my way to make my show better for everyone. And that's what you need. That's what makes us performers.
All right. Well, great, John. I think we've taken up a lot of your time today. We've talked and talked, man, and I apologize for that because I know as we're recording, it's getting late, and you probably need to go to bed. You probably need to put your puppets to bed and all that good stuff. So
you're right. I tell your wife to stop calling me, Michael. Stop. Okay. It's only one.
Like I said, you need to start writing the checks because college is looming. So.
I know the case, I guess. Yeah, well, thank you, Michael. Thanks for having me. It was really interesting. I hope it helps the 15-year-old kid that you're talking about.
Yeah, well, you know, all of the 15-year-old kids out there, even if some of them are 25 or 35 or 55.
You're never too late to learn this game. It's a fun game. It's so much fun to do, and it's great to make a living doing this. It's very fulfilling.
Thanks again, John. It's johnpeasy.com. Once again, if you want to catch up with him, he's also on Facebook and YouTube. He's really all over, and he is somebody, if you haven't seen John perform, you need to check some of that out and check out his iPhone app. It's still out there as well. Sorry. Go ahead. Didn't mean to step on you.
I said, thank you, Michael. Thank you.
There you go. Hey, can you still buy a miniature version of Andy?
Yeah.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, I have two cases of them with me right here in the car. Do you have one, Michael?
No, I don't have one. I just happen to know you sell.
Well, you text me your address, and I'll send you one. I'll be more than happy.
You betcha. Thanks again. Thanks for everybody for listening. Until next week, keep up with everything happening in the world of magic and illusion, and maybe even ventriloquism at itricks.com, and we will see you again next week.